This podcast is protected by copyright and not for broadcast. See rsn.net.au for more details.
Here's Joe McKinnon.
Good morning. Great to have you with us for Talking Horses. Weren't we spoilt by a superb day of racing yesterday? It hasn't stopped raining in Sydney for weeks, and Red Zell galloped through the deluge to create his own piece of history at Randwick. He climbed Everest for the second time and seemed to do it with ease. It's an extraordinary story for the sport. He represents extremes of the spectrum. Yulong Investments, the rich and powerful Chinese slot holders, and a syndicate of owners that must be pinching themselves as the magic ride just goes on and on. You just had to look at the sheer joy and satisfaction on the faces of the slot holders to know that Yulong will now want more of the same. It's surely a guarantee that they'll be here to stay for a long, long time. The Everest concept is a winner, and no amount of griping from Sydney detractors will stop the juggernaut now. They closed the gates at Randwick yesterday and couldn't fit in any more people to the course. That's an achievement in itself, in a city that does not share the same sporting culture as Victoria. And in Melbourne yesterday, we enjoyed another classic Guineas day. The sun was shining there, and the autumn sun was brightest. What a horse, winning the feature race in dominant style and announcing himself as the country's latest star. The burning question is, will he take on his stablemate Winx in the Cox Plate in a few weeks? I hope so. He'll give her something to think about, and what a showdown it would be. Arrowfield now have a major interest in the Redoute's Choice colt. Perhaps they'll be the influencing factor in the end. We'll get the backstory on the Autumn Sun with Ollie Coolman a bit later. Also coming up on the show, we talk to Michael Wallace about the Utzon factor and catch up with one of Australian equestrian's most inspiring characters, Sue Ellen Lovett, a blind Paralympian who is riding hundreds of kilometres across New South Wales to raise money for cancer treatment. But first, Caulfield Cup-winning mare Jamaica was covered this week by Darley's Impending. Her owner, Colin McKenna, joins us to discuss the decision.
RSN 927's Talking Horses with Joe McKinnon.
An all-Victorian story in the breeding barn this week with Jamaica, the Caulfield Cup-winning mare, being covered by Darley's Impending. The mare's owner joins us on the program, Colin McKenna. How are you, Col?
Yeah, real good, thank you, Joan. Real good.
That's good.
Today.
And all went well with the covering?
Yes, yes, she was covered last Saturday morning, yes. And all's good.
Yeah. What was the reason for the decision to go to Impending? What was the lure there for you?
A couple of reasons. We asked to do, obviously, a selection, if you'd understand, or a selection of the breeding, and we also had other advice, but I relied a fair bit on Rick Jamieson, who bred the mare, and he also bred Black Caviar, so I think he knows a bit about breeding a few. And that's what I thought. And he was very, very helpful, and he came up with about four stallions for her that would suit her and match her. That's only just his opinion, of course. It doesn't have to be. Others will say you're mad. You've sent your paid all that money for a mare and sent her to a first-year stallion. Well, that may be the case. But he's as superbly bred, like he's by Lonro and out of an Encosta mare. So, I mean, he's a very, very well-bred stallion. And we didn't want to really travel her this year to the Hunter either. There was a few factors why she went there, but we're quite happy with our selection. You know, very, very happy, actually.
And Pending himself as a racehorse competed in top company, winning five of his 18 starts, including Group 1s.
That's right. He won two Group 1s from memory. Australia was one. And he's a magnificent horse. We went and seen him. It was probably, Darley had a parade there about 3 weeks ago, and Janice and I, and we couldn't get any time with the Darley people, but when we went up to see him, and he's a magnificent horse. He's a beautiful walking horse. He's sort of, and Kieran was there with us, and Kieran's had some input in it too. He's no longer in the mare, but he's still got, you know, she's his horse as far as he's concerned. And he did like, he was a bit off him for a while until he had a look at him, and he's quite happy that we're going there. And because Mel Fallon, our great old friend, he's still got a share. He retained his share in it, and which we're quite thrilled about. You know, but everybody's quite happy, I think. And we'll see. Look, it's to get the first out of the way that's the most important thing, isn't it? And we'll go from there and see what we do. But she did have the opportunity to quite a few. Obviously, as anybody would know, she could have had, like, there'd be plenty of studs would offer her, would take her and go for us. But Darley's good to us. And, you know, that their deal was very, very good. So that's why we went that way.
And he'll inject a bit of speed into the line too.
That's right. We don't want her to be too slow. I mean, there's no sense in putting her staying over her because who knows. But and he's got a bit of speed. He's got a superb pedigree. That's the main thing. I mean, you send these mares, you've got to keep them pedigrees right because you never know what you breed. If you breed a good colt, well, where they go, or you breed a good filly, where they go, don't you? You know?
And how's her health overall at the moment, Colin? Because she's had her challenges.
Yes, she did, and that was another reason. Her health is very, very good, right? She and as it's quite well documented, Kieran was considering bringing her back to race. We all thought that would give her another prep, but she just, you know, as Kieran said to me, I think on her last trial, he said, if I had a stable full going as well as her, I'd be very, very happy. But he said she just lacked that length that she always had, you know. So we said, well, why go on with her? There's no need to go on with her. We don't want to send her around for the sake of sending her around in a race. And that's what he said. So she was good. And she had, you know, a couple of, when she was letting down after we retired her and she was letting down, she had a couple of little issues tied up a couple of times. But nothing, no, her health is very, very good. Health is super.
Well, that's good news. Now, I look forward to seeing what she can produce now.
That's right. We've got to see, keep our fingers crossed for another 14 or 15 days or whatever to see if we get a positive, you know.
Exactly. And, Colin, the last time we spoke to you on Talking Horses, it was shortly before you were heading up to the UK for the Royal Ascot mission with Merchant Navy. What an outcome that was.
How good was that, Joe?
I thought of you there and your top hat and tails. I thought, gee whiz.
I know that old fella. We thought that was an unbelievable week. We took all our friends, our close friends with us. Everybody had a good time. And to be standing in the yard there and we only got there by a nose, but that, nobody else knows that, if you know what I mean, after you read the records. Well, he's won the Golden Jubilee, and I personally think that's right up to, you know, when you win them, you think, well, we've got to the pinnacle now. So we're just going to see where we go from there.
And he's got off to a good start at stud then.
Yes. Oh, excuse me. And he was considered in the mix too, and still will be. But it was just a couple of things, as I said, her health, how she goes through it and all that is all a big factor. And at least now she's, with the courtesy of Gil Guy or Rick Jamieson, who's a very, very nice man, and she's at their place. And she only got to walk around the corner to him pending at Darley in Victoria. So, I mean, that just makes it so much easier that you can do that. Whereas we had to send her to Merchant, which I'd love to send her to him, but she's got a long trip to the Hunter, and, of course, there's drought up there, you know. These are all factors you've got to take into consideration when we've got horses around you.
Yeah, welfare is absolutely paramount, especially with a mare of such meaning to you, Jamaica.
Yes, she has. She has been. Anyway, we've got to try and breed another one out of her.
Yep. Well, good luck with that. And thanks.
Well, that's right. It generally doesn't happen, as you know. It generally doesn't happen. So, but that's the chance we take. Some mares leave them. Some good mares are good breeders, and some good mares just do nothing, do they? You know, but that's life.
Right. Time will tell.
That's right. Time will tell.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, great to catch up with you, Colin, and good luck for the next couple of weeks, the business end of the spring in Melbourne especially.
I'll save it all be. Good on you. Thank you, Joe.
All right. That's Colin McKenna, of course, the part owner of the top mare, Jamaica, who was covered last weekend by Impending at Darley, who stands at Northwood Park in Seymour. The Sydney Opera House has been the centre of much controversy and discussion in racing circles and beyond over the past couple of weeks And a horse by the name of the Opera House has also been a talking point. The timing couldn't have been more perfect, with one of her sons running, of course, yesterday at Caulfield Utzon. We're going to go and track the story behind the Opera House now with Michael Wallace, who picked up this horse out of the Magic Millions National Broodmare sales back in 2013 for $30,000. And her story has been a constant one of interest for the racing public ever since then. How are you, Michael?
I'm very well, Jeff.
Well, take us back to that day at the National Broodmare Sale on the Gold Coast when you decided to pay $30,000 for this mare who's gone on to be a pretty handy producer.
Yeah, I suppose looking back on it now, it was a day to remember. But at the time, she was a unique sort of purchase and sort of gained a lot of attention because of her colour. But when we sort of broke it down, the fact that she was a Zabille mare and was related to one of Windsor Park's, old, very successful families, that was more what we're after, the Zabille blood and the long-term family blood than the white factor. So it was an interesting tale.
And so, Michael, her progeny have been a huge talking point every time they go through the sales ring, and they've lodged a pretty good return over the time of over $1 million in the ring.
Yeah, she's been an amazing financial return for Roddy and Gina Schick at Windsor Park, and there's been some big results off a $30,000 outlay originally on her. So the foals have obviously gathered a lot of attention for Windsor as well, and the industry as a whole, as each one's been born. So it's been it's been an interesting story with a number of white foals popping out.
Yeah, so she's had six foals in total, and the last four of them have been white.
Yeah, I think the first one from memory was a big brown, and it was a bay or a brown, and then she had a chestnut, and then since then, there's been a number of white ones. The first one obviously went up to Japan, and we purchased the second one with Kieran Maher Racing, and then there's Utzon, and then she had a Mongolian Khan white one as well, which unfortunately had an accident in the paddock, subsequently euthanized. But four in a row, so it's kind of unique.
Now, Little Utzon, named after, of course, the Opera House's architect, so very appropriate that. I remember seeing at Windsor Park during one of their stallion parades, racing around like a maniac, quite a character.
Yeah, a lot of her foals have been like that, sort of pretty independent and a lot of characters to them. So, Utzon, she was always a lot of quality and, the mother's got that sort of Zabille about her, and obviously she's treated a little specially and then gets a lot of attention. So a lot of her foals sort of probably pick up on the extra attention that she receives, no doubt.
And the mare herself now at the Opera House, how old is she, Michael, do you know?
Oh, off the top of my head, she wouldn't be too old. I think she would have been about four or five when we purchased her, so she can't be too old now. She must be 5 years ago. She might be 10 or 11 years old, I would think. She's got a fair few years left in her, I would think.
Yeah. It's been a great talking point, hasn't it? The Opera House, the building itself in recent times. In your opinion, representing the bloodstock side of things, Michael, what's been your view of all this controversy of late, and what did you think about the barrier draw?
Oh, I think anything new is worth trying. Personally, I sort of think it was a bit of a mountain out of a molehill type scenario. I'm sure the people that were standing down by the Opera House that were visiting for the first time, enjoyed it when it was in its, standard state, and probably also enjoyed it with a big light show on the side of it. And at the end of the day, that's all it really is. I think it's garnered a lot of attention, which is good, good or bad. But, it is what it is. It's nothing really too serious when we break it all down. But it's a great event. It's got people talking, and that's what we want. Roll on the Everest, and we'll see what happens there tomorrow.
And, Michael, of course, no doubt in New Zealand racing circles, it's been a huge talking point as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody is always interested in it, and there's always a different lead-up to it with the chopping and changing. We've seen a bit more of that this year than we have last year, so that's always added intrigue. And so it gets everybody talking, I guess, when you get such an open field and such a big amount of money on the line, you know, it's a talking point. And, you know, anything that gets everybody talking about racing is got to be good.
Michael, what's making news with your Asian connections? Will the colours be going around much this spring? Have you got some nice horses that we'll see over the coming weeks?
Yeah, we've got a few nice horses coming through. Albray is potentially sort of floating around the Cups races, which is good. We have a very exciting three-year-old in New Zealand called Madison County. He's the current favourite for the 2,000 guineas, and I'm sure we'll see him into Australia sooner rather than later. Very exciting horse, and we all know that the best of the Kiwi three-year-old crops generally stand up pretty well against the sort of 1,600-metre, 2,000-metre Australian crop. So excited to get him over there as well. And then as we head towards Christmas, a bunch of the two-year-olds come out. So it's always fingers crossed time. And you know, I'm sure there's something in the mix of them. Which one it is just yet, well I don't quite know, but I'm sure there's something there.
Mm. And what's the general climate like in the New Zealand racing industry at the moment, Michael? There's been much review done, John Massara handing down his report on how to fix things recently. How do you feel things are faring at the moment?
Oh, yeah, I think it's a very simple process for us at the moment. We either need to implement what has been suggested in the Massara report. It, you know, is a pretty wide sweeping change. You know, and most of that needs to be implemented. If it doesn't, well, you know, the music will stop very quickly. So it's pretty simple in my mind. It needs to be embraced. It's a thorough look. You know, at the industry as a whole, and it's not sugarcoated, so, and nor it should be. It's in a place where there needs to be change and there's the ability to make change. And if they do make change, you know, New Zealand has a wonderful climate to rear and race horses. You know, so it's got to be positive to embrace that. And if we do, it could be an exciting turning point.
And have the administrators there been consulting with the major players like yourself during this period?
Yeah, there's been a wide-ranging, you know, consultation with a number of various parties. You know, I had discussions with John Massara and myself, for sure, as did thousands of people. So it was a very well-constructed, well-researched report that sort of took advice and thoughts from a wide variety of people within the industry. So, you know, there wasn't much left out, and every suggestion, you know, had reasoning and backing behind it. You know, so it's, you know, it was well thought out, and it makes sense.
Well, that's good to hear. Michael, thanks for talking to us on the program. Nice to check in with you, and yeah, let's hope that Utzon can continue to go on from strength to strength. Every time these types of horses race, it's good for the sport, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know, it'd be a great thing to be seeing these white horses flash around the racetracks. It's always something different, something exciting.
They certainly do a lot to attract the wider public interest, don't they?
They definitely do. I'm sure they'll get a few punters' dollars just for the white tractor.
Michael, look forward to seeing you at a racetrack somewhere over the next few weeks.
Thanks, Joe. Stay well.
Okay. That's Michael Wallace joining us from across the Tasman. He was responsible for purchasing the White Mare, the Opera House, from the Magic Millions National Broodmare sales back in 2013. And she's gone on to be one of the great stories of Australasian racing with her progeny racing and creating plenty of interest.
The results that matter. The Talking Horses Racing Run-Through.
Caulfield Guineas Day yesterday, and we opened the program with the listed English debutante stakes over 1,000 metres. It was won by the two-year-old filly Champagne Boom, a daughter of Spirit of Boom, out of A Dash for Cashmere Lucky Toss. She was an $90,000 yearling sales purchase on the Gold Coast this year, and she's related to a winner, Our Regal Warrior. Race 2 on the program was the listed Weekend Hustler over 1,400 metres, won by O'Connorclasm from the Darren Weir team, a four-year-old entire, by Turak Toff out of an Encosta de Lago mare Gold Lottie. This horse is related to winners A Lot of Spur, Crucible, Gold Spur, Sky King and Sky Spur. Race 3 at Group 3, the Thoroughbred Club Stakes over 1,200 metres.
Gee, she was impressive. She's bounced back Sunlight, this daughter of Zoo Star, trained by Tony McAvoy, is out of a charge forward mare, Solar Charged, and is related to winners Shaker and Solar Cry. She was sold for $300,000 through the 2017 Magic Millions Gold Coast yearling sales. The Cape Grim Beef Stakes, over 1,200 metres at Group 3, won by Toby Edmonds' Winter Bride, a four-year-old mare by not a single doubt, out of a Perugino mare, Amberino. Winter Bride is related to winners Arellano and Sogno d'Oro. Race 5, the Scalacci Stakes, over 1,100 metres at Group 2, won by Joe Pride's Ball of Muscle. He's now an eight-year-old. He's a son of Dubawi, out of a gold rose mare, Par 4, and is related to a lot of winners, Balistrand, Frustrating, In 3, Our Boy Lucas, Our Lucas, Super Easy, Terra Vista, and Tiger Tease. The 1,000 guineas at Group 1, and what a horse she's shaping to be. Amphitrite, our winner of the week recently on Talking Horses, and she keeps going from strength to strength, winning last Saturday at Flemington and going on to win the Group 1 feature for the three-year-old fillies yesterday. Coming from last on the turn and storming home to win, this daughter of Sebring is out of a Redoute's Choice mare, Ocean Dream, and looks an absolute superstar in the making. She's related to winners French Blue and Lukela and was purchased for just $50,000 through the 2017 Magic Millions Adelaide yearling sales. The Aquis Toorak Handicap over the mile at Group 1, Land of Plenty. Isn't he a lovely horse? A five-year-old entire by Stratum out of a Spectrum mare, Dancing. He was very impressive yesterday, winning easily. He's related to winners Chavan, Sikeli Africa and Vettel, and was an $80,000 yearling sales purchase at Easter in 2015 out of Session 2. Race 8, the Group 1 Ladbroke Stakes over 2,000 metres. Saeed Bin Sarur's Ben Battle, Too Good, a five-year-old horse by Dubawi, out of a Selkirk mare, Na Rain. And the Group 1 Caulfield Guineas. How impressive was he? The Autumn Sun. He was in a class of his own yesterday. Caulfield, this colt by Redoute's Choice, out of a Galileo mare, As Mina. He was sold for $700,000 at the 2017 English Australian Easter yearling sales. And we'll be hearing a lot more of him in the next little while. Race 10, the final event at Group 2, was the Herbert Power Stakes over 2,400 metres. Yucatan, Too Good, a five-year-old entire by Galileo, out of a Celtic Swing mare, Six Perfections. And it was Everest Day at Randwick. Red Zell making it back-to-back wins in the world's richest turf race. The six-year-old gelding is by Snitzel, out of a Rubiton mare, Milrich. He's related to winners Declaree, God Willing, Inquisition and Rich Esprit, and is the best $120,000 Triple Crown syndications will ever spend. He was bought out of the 2014 Magic Millions Gold Coast yearling sales and is now Australia's second highest ever prize money earner behind Maccabi Diva. Other feature races in Sydney yesterday included the Group 3 Craven Plate over 2,000 metres. Mossendale was the winner, a six-year-old gelding by Castledale out of a Strategic Image mare, Hot and Moss. Mossendale is related to a winner, Moss and Bolt. And the other feature race in Sydney yesterday was the Sydney Stakes at Group 3 over 1,200 metres, won very impressively by Greg Hickman's Parata, a four-year-old entire by Piero, out of a Flying Spur mare, November Flight. Piarata is related to Ashokan, Fields of Tuscany and Power Uprise, all winners. And he was bought for $160,000 through the 2016 Magic Millions Gold Coast yearling sales.
The Talking Horses, winner of the week.
DVA takes the lead at the 600 metres and they're stacked up behind, head on the rails. Then Anaheed from Vendaval. Where's Speedy Com going? Off towards the Doncaster Hotel. Mesmer's gone with it. Coming around the turn, it's DVA, head on the rails. Anaheed being cuddled up the rise. Disruptors closing off behind them. Reddy's Girl under the pump, then Vendaval and further back to Valera lead. He goes for home now and Anaheed. It's Storm to the front, 200 metres out. It's drawn well clear. Disruptors poking through, going to second. but Anaheed holds a big lead in the victory vein. Disruptor's going to finish best of the rest, but Anaheed, very classy filly this one. Anaheed by a big space.
If you were watching the early part of racing in Sydney yesterday, you wouldn't have missed the opening performance by Anaheed in the victory vein plate over 1,000 metres. She was on debut at Randwick. She's from the Peter and Paul Snowden team, a daughter of Fastnet Rock. This two-year-old filly looks an absolute star in the making. She's out of the Testa Rossamare, Rostover, and she's related to winners Farouk and Prontezza. Watch her as she makes her way through the grades. Anaheed, surely a star of the future. Now to one of the more heartwarming stories you'll hear anywhere, and it's about a blind equestrian's ride against cancer. Paralympian Sue Ellen Lovett started riding more than 800 kilometres earlier this month across the central western New South Wales outback region to ride against cancer and raise money for the new Western Cancer Centre in Dubbo. Sue Ellen is taking a break right now on a hilltop somewhere, and she joins us on Talking Horses. How are you, Sue Ellen?
I'm great, thanks, Jo. Really good.
How's the ride going so far?
Oh, look, really good. And it was really funny when we were doing the plans for the ride. We were planning on, you know, how we would get the horses best through with the heat and the everything like that. And I've had to go and buy winter rugs. <It's been
cold. laughs> You would have thought the drought had break during the ride.
Well, you know, I tend to think they had to handle rain back. They're doing a ride on horseback and we brought rain.
And some places
have had really, really good rain. We had rain the day we rode from Golgong, Mudgee to Golgong, and then yesterday Golgong to Dunning. Just extreme, extreme wind.
Oh, that's terrific. Well, Sue Ellen, to your backstory first, for our listeners that aren't familiar, you've experienced some major challenges in your life, and you were diagnosed with a hereditary eye disease at the age of just 12 that over time has left you totally blind. And you're also a cancer survivor, and you do feel very passionate about helping others in the community with similar struggles.
Look, absolutely. And I can think also, just to let people know, you've just got to have a go and keep going, because life's too short not to make the best of every day. So, look, I know cancer's a terrible sentence, and I think with what we're doing, Challenge Ride Against Cancer, we can raise enough money to make a difference to someone else's life and the lives of other people in central and western New South Wales. And when you speak to Dr. Florian Honeyball, who is the head of the oncology at Dubbo Base Hospital, the statistics are frightening. So if you live in Sydney and you have cancer, you have a 65% chance of beating that. If you live in Mudgee, and it was really interesting, Florian used postcodes, and he said if you have a 2850, you have like 55% chance. But if you live out past Bourke, the statistics are lower than 50% chance of beating it, or, you know, people even saying, well, look, I'll go and get treatment. And those statistics to me are frightening. So we need to make it more accessible for people to be treated, not to have troubles, and to look after the family.
In the past, you've proven to be a very accomplished fundraiser, and you've completed now 9 long-distance horse rides covering over 16,000 kilometres and raised a phenomenal amount of money, just over $3 million for organisations such as the Guide Dogs New South Wales, the Sydney Paralympian Committee and the Riding for the Disabled.
Yeah. I think I'm blessed that I can ride, because that is a way I can make a difference. And I think it is just so important to make a difference in people's lives, because, you know, you feel so good. And it can be just something as simple as a good morning or a smile to make somebody's day. And I'm doing something I love doing, which is riding horses. I have a group of like-minded people, all of my sighted guides on the ride and my support crew. I've got in front and back. We've got a truck, beautiful truck driver, Lynette Jarvis. Like the list goes, there are 12 on the team. And the coordinating of this has been massive. It's been like herding cats.
Now, can you explain also how
this all functions, we're not being able to see, essentially. How are you guided on this ride?
Well, I have someone behind me, someone in front of me, and we're trying as we can, because I don't cope with car. I just worries me if a horse goes sideways, you can be in front of a vehicle in no time at all. When we rode into Mudgee the other day, we tracked the horses for a bit of it, but so we could miss out on a very tight cutting coming into Mudgee and put the horses on the road again. We cut about 4 kilometres off, put the horses on the road again at the Honey Haven, and as we were coming down, I just rang the police and I said, look, this is a situation. Could you give us an escort? Well, the police, Mudgee police, came out in 10 minutes and were there and escorted us safely into town. It was, you know, it's doable if you do take the right precautions. And my sighted guide's wonderful. Like, they talk non-stop, and whether it's a direction with what, you know, to go around a guide post or, you know, a dead blue up ahead that was shy, all of that feedback. But the most amazing thing on this ride is we're using all Australian thoroughbred off the track, and they've been supplied to us by Racing New South Wales, and they're from their rehoming program. And 5 of the horses have been gifted to me, and we are selling them on the ride. And we, out of the 5 horses, we have already sold 3. We've got 2 to go. And I spend a lot of time on the back of a beautiful Godolphin horse called Bashka. And Bashka looks after me like you wouldn't believe. And yesterday, in the horrific wind, my sighted guide, Joe, was in front beside me, directing me all the time, like just non-stop feedback, because of the wind is very, very disorientating when you can't see. It just, but just a little bit scary. And Ashka all of a sudden started going in the tunnel. And I said, Joe, he's going on the tunnel. She said, he's going around a guidepost. And so the next time, I said, Joe, and she said, he's going around a guidepost. So this horse, in a matter of 70 kilometres, picked up, he went out on the road to go round the guidepost and back on the verge. Same thing when we came up to a culvert. It just blew our minds, this amazing horse, what he's picked up on, what I can do and what I can't do. And he's taken over the guiding part. It's amazing. He's so cool.
That is an amazing story, Sue Ellen. And by the sounds of it, the rapport that you have with this horse and many others throughout your life has been a very important part of your journey to dealing with this enormous physical challenge that you've had to manage since you were a child.
I'm really blessed. You know, people say, oh, you only ever get one good horse. I have had numerous, from my little horse, Mudgee, that did all my long-distance rides and was, you know, she was on the road most of the time in that 16,000 kilometres, raising that $3.1 million. And then my stallion, Hectic, my beautiful Desert Arada I have now, that we're hopefully early next year we will do our first Inter-Tour and Grand Prix on. Like, it's just, I am so blessed. I am truly very blessed with the horses I have that come into my life. And there's been numerous.
And you've even represented Australia at Olympic level as a Paralympian in 1996. You were in Atlanta.
Yeah, competed in Atlanta, and a good craftsman should never blame their tools, but the horses were, they got nice little disabled horses for disabled people. Those horses were really a little bit of an insult. And keeping in mind, back then the horses were drawn out of a hat. So the first horse I drew out of a hat, totally not suitable. Same thing the second. And then the third horse I got given was a little chestnut. And I was horrified because this little chestnut had tied up with one of the South African countries. And so I got one day to ride this horse before I competed for Australia, whereas everyone had 3 days at 45 minutes to ride. And this little horse and I were coming across the diagonal, and it bucked. Not once. That's numerous times. And I didn't get a score for staying on 8 seconds. I was so disappointed. And hence I didn't get the greatest dressage scores. So I would have thought, well, for staying on the buck, I should have got a score. So, but it goes on. And then after that, I was asked by the Honourable Michael Knight, the Minister for the Olympics, he put me on the board of the Sydney Paralympics. So I went through the journey with the birth of the Sydney Paralympics, which was just amazing, sitting in the boardroom watching something, a world-class event, just blossom and bloom, and hence, you know, the best Paralympic and Olympic Games the world has ever seen. It was amazing. And then 1999, I was selected to represent Australia in Denmark at the World Equestrian Games, and I was in the bronze medal team in Denmark and ranked fourth in the world. And again, our horses were drawn out of a hat. And the same thing with Sydney. Our horses were drawn out of a hat, and I rode a beautiful horse called Rock of Gibraltar in Sydney, and I got a fourth and a fifth. I didn't medal, but, yeah, it was just such an honour representing your country. I don't think it gets any better than that.
Do you have aspirations to compete at the Paralympics again?
Look, if someone had a horse that would suit me, I would love to go to the Paralympics again. My horse, Desiderata, definitely isn't the standard needed. You need to have a world-class horse. And you would need I would need a horse that is at least doing advanced level, because the tests I would be doing are around about medium advanced level.
Yeah, it's not easy, is it, Sue Ellen? And back to this fundraising ride that you're on at the moment. When does it all wrap up, and where?
Okay, well, the ride finishes on Sunday, the 21st of October, at the Dubbo Turf Club, and the fundraising so far is going extremely well. We would have over 40,000 in the bank. We have had a fundraiser at Dunedoo last night, raising well over $2,500. So the fundraising is going extremely well, and yeah, it's rocking along very nicely.
Mm. You really are such a genuine and inspiring person, Sue Ellen, one of the most pleasant and memorable that I've met during my time working in the equestrian space, and it's an absolute credit to you what you're doing at the moment. How will you feel at the end of the ride? Will you fall in a heap for a few days?
No, I'm not allowed to. It's going so quick. The days are going so quick, but it's really hilarious. Everyone gets up each morning and says, what's the date today? What day is it today? You know, you spend long hours, you're in the saddle, then you're fundraising, up early of a morning. It's just nonstop. But it's a lot of fun. And when we get in early enough, we sit round and everyone has a chat and a few drinks.
And you've celebrated your birthday this week as well.
Yeah, 21 again.
Well, I tell you what, you seem to have more energy than the average 21-year-old these days.
No, it's all good. Yeah, and in fact, my birthday is today, so it was really funny. You know, everybody wishing me happy birthday and the wonderful Facebook, happy birthday. It's really quite overwhelming. But I think these birthdays are overrated. I think when you get to 21, you just don't count anymore.
Well, if only 21-year-olds had the work ethic and genuine passion that you do about life, Sue Ellen, they'd go far. Thanks for joining us on Talking Horses this morning. Enjoy the rest of the ride and safe travels, and we'll look forward to checking in with you at the end of it all to see how you've fared with the fundraising.
That would be wonderful. And thank you so much, Jo. So greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, that's Sue Ellen Lovett, the blind Paralympian who is busy riding across central western New South Wales at the moment to raise money for cancer. He's one of the most exciting prospects we've seen in Australian racing for some time, the Autumn Sun, the stunning winner of yesterday's Group 1 Caulfield Guineas. And Ollie Coolman joins us on Talking Horses this morning to explain the backstory of this magnificent Redoute's Choice colt. How are you, Ollie?
Yeah, good. Happy to talk horses. I've got a horse voice.
I bet you have. Well, you probably didn't have to do too much screaming as he went to the line because he was so far in front, you had it in the bag.
Yeah, I was happy to go early yesterday. We enjoyed the celebrations. We pushed the button about as early as James did.
Yeah. What a horse he is, Ollie.
Yeah, he's a pretty smart horse, and what we're enthused about is the fact that we believe he's doing it relatively early in his maturity. You know, we think he's a bit more furnishing to do yet, and and a bit more to come. And one thing about Chris, and now with Arrowfield involved, we're happy to give him that chance.
Mm. Take us back to the Inglis Easter Yearling sales when you, under the Hermitage Bloodstock or Thoroughbreds banner, decided to purchase this colt for $700,000. What was it that absolutely attracted you to him?
Oh, well, like every sale, you go and develop a shortlist, and Chris Waller and his team, sales is led by Guy Mulcaster, and he goes and... he obviously looks at everything in an Easter sale because they're all worth looking at. So he identified a number of horses for his stable, for the Chris Waller stable. Our order was for something that would win over 2,000 metres and looking for something with a bit of stamina on the page and in his physique. This horse ticked all those boxes and he was pigeonholed for us. Whereas some of the other owners wanted a sort of a more precocious or a sprinter type. That's the way it works out. You know, there's a lot of people that Guy has to keep happy, a lot of people that Chris has to keep happy, and it's sometimes a little bit difficult at the sales. Who gets what? You know, we've got lists going from one side of the table to the other, but Guy, to his credit, and Chris, to his credit, they kept it pretty narrow for us. Our order was pretty specific. It certainly wasn't to win a Golden Rose or a J.G. Atkins or a Caulfield Guineas, but we've been pretty happy to grab them, and it appears that we've got the one on the top.
His performances have been simply outstanding, and arguably he should be unbeaten. He's had 5 wins and a third from now 6 starts, Ollie, with earnings of just over $2.3 million. Who would have thought he's almost before his time? It's probably scary to think what he's going to be in another year to 2 years' time.
Yeah, it is. It's quite frightening, to be honest. And when you hear what Chris Waller and all the horses that he's had through his hands, what he's got to say about him, it's extremely encouraging. And we don't all need them to be this good, but by gee, when they are, you've got to treat it as something special and be honoured and humbled by the entire experience, really.
He's a cracking type of horse, and his pedigree supports his looks. He's from the famed Aga Khan family. The Autumn Sun is the second foal of the unraced Galileo mare, Asmina, which is a half-sister to Azimor.
Yeah, it's a pretty good page. And, you know, what attracted the studs and particularly John Massar and Arrowfield to the horse to secure him is not just his obvious ability and physique, but his page, his pedigree suggests that he wouldn't have to do too much to impress those in the Northern Hemisphere in order to do a dual hemisphere.
Mm. Okay, so the burning question, will he or won't he? I know it's too early to even probably speculate to any huge extent, potentially take on his stablemate Winx in the Cox Plate. It was much the discussion shortly after he crossed the line in the Guineas yesterday. What are your personal thoughts on that, Ollie?
Well, we've probably discussed it a lot less than anyone. And it certainly wasn't... it was talked about very early in his campaign, very early in the preparation. Chris would like to have him ready in the event that something might have gone wrong through the course of the last few weeks with the great mare. To have a horse like him any other year, you'd probably give it a go. But in all seriousness, Chris is he's a horseman. He loves his animals. He wants them to race for a long time. And I don't believe, personally, that Chris will want to put the pressure on a young, immature horse to run in the Cox Plate against such a hot, hot mare like Winx, or even some of those little horses in the race. I mean, it could burst him, and the attitude of the syndicate now is to nurture him for longevity. And whilst sure there's the lure of going off the stud particularly early, he's ticked the boxes. In our minds, we'd like to do a little bit more yet, and we've probably talked about travelling the horse more than the Cox Plate, to be honest with you.
Mm. So does he go on to the Derby then?
No, he won't go on for this Derby. He'll probably just come home now and get ready for the autumn, and that'll be up to Chris, and then he'll, you know, whilst he's saying it's up to the owners, these owners are going to say, well, mate, it's up to you. So at the moment, we're all just passing the buck. We'll look after him. We'll do the right thing by the animal. And I remember, I'm part of the, we spell Winx at our property at the Hermitage. And I remember the lure Chris had of, should he run the Queen Elizabeth after she won the Doncaster? And it would be pretty obvious to everyone on radio and everyone that didn't own the horse and everyone that didn't train the horse to go for the big carrot. And he elected at that stage to look after, and now here she is at this age of life. And not suggesting your son will be racing when he's seven, but you know, if you look after them when they're young, they'll give you plenty more back.
As you would well know, Ollie, having been a trainer and grown up in this sport and lived and breathed it all your life, patience really is a virtue, especially with these top class horses.
Yeah, it is, and it's a very hard thing to do. Especially with prize money the way it is and what a victory can do in a Group 1 race to the value of the animal, whether it be a colt or a filly, and to eventually become a breeding proposition. But at the end of the day, I think what's been proven by Chris and his team over the last few years is the one thing that's consistent, other than a double-figure Group 1, one wins every year, is the fact that those horses just generally keep coming back, and they keep coming back because they're not emptied out when they're young and developing. So that's why we were attracted to the Chris Waller stable, and that gives us comfort. It's the way we operate, it's the way we work, and we're enjoying it. You know, we've got a small number of horses, and we know that when they go there, they're going to be looked after, and we'll enjoy those horses for a number of seasons, it's not just going to be a flash in the pan and miss your target as a young horse.
Where does this all stack up for you in your life and career, Ollie, seeing the autumn sun cross the line in the Guineas yesterday like you did in your colours?
Pretty high, you know. It's the ultimate experience. I've watched Caulfield Guineas and dreamt of leading one back like we've seen some of those owners in the last few years, and J.J. Atkins, and wondering what it would be like to win that with a colt. Watching the Golden Rose and seeing the joy it brings to, you know, I mean, look at last year, it was Trapeze Artist and Bert Vieira with all his success in business, and then you see what a race does to an individual, it's not my horse. I just represent the owners, but it's a hell of a, it's a humbling experience, and to be part of it, even, you know, I just dreamt of touching these horses years ago. You know, I just dreamt of maybe one day I'll be able to give it a feed at night, you know, and here we are right in the thick of things, and it's pretty good. But I've been taught well. We've been dealing with some good horses at Chris's over the last few years, and I've seen some owners enjoy some big wins and been part of some big celebrations. So they've taught me well. So I'm conditioned to it. We had dinner last night with some of the with Peter Tighe and some of the other Chris Waller owners, and they've shown me how to celebrate. So that's how we do it. We just enjoy it while it's there, and because you know, realistically thinking it might not be there tomorrow. And so while it's happening in racing, you enjoy it.
Well, I'm pleased for you, Ollie. You absolutely deserve it. And your father and your mum, Anton and Marg, must be very proud as well.
Yeah, they are. To be honest, they're at home. They're looking after the kids. And I haven't really spoken to them because I think they were silenced by it. Normally they'd ring. Normally we'd get text message and, this is what I thought, that's what I thought, but I think it just took words out of everyone yesterday. So we'll do a debrief when we get home.
Thanks for joining us on the program this morning, Ollie. I know that it would have been a fierce night of celebrations.
Yeah, no, it was, and hopefully there's many more.
All right, that's Ollie Coolman, who is the managing owner of the stunning Caulfield Guineas winner yesterday, the Autumn Sun. The Cox Plate has all but been ruled out. We'll look forward to seeing him in the autumn. Thanks for your company on Talking Horses this morning. Hope you enjoyed the program. That's all we've got time for. Thanks to our special guests this week, Michael Wallace, Ollie Coolman, Colin McKenna and Sue Ellen Lovitz. Until next time, take care. Bye for now.